The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 577. I am your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight, joined live from Chi-Town, Mr. Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And of course, Brian Mongioma.
What up?
All right, guys, we have returned with another one. Manny, you're in Chicago right now. What's going on over there?
Oh, yes. I'm in town for a C2E2, as I said on the last show. Tomorrow is going to be the first day. So if anybody's out here in Chicago or, you know, any of the fans, can come by my table and say what's up. Because I got all kinds of stuff.
All right, good stuff. Shout out to Kuel, you know, for subscribing. Appreciate that. Hey, you're actually here on time, brother. No Chris action tonight. Brett, who knows? You know, he may show up. Me, you may even get Adam action. Although, you know, something you guys don't know. Sometimes Adam shows up after the show is over. It's like, yo, we still doing this? I'm like, bruh, we hit it half an hour ago, you know? Let's get into it, man. We're going to discuss the Xbox partner preview, which I didn't even know was happening until, like, you know, today. I was like, okay. So we'll do like a quickish kind of rundown. Some of the games I found, this one website. Oh, it's Pure Xbox, and it seemed to have it in the correct order, because every other place I went to had it in alphabetical order. I know they didn't announce shit in that order, you know? The first game we have here is something called Hunter the Reckoning Death Wish. What did you guys think of that? I don't remember this game.
I'm barely finding out that there's a conference.
Damn, we're all in the same, because you're all a bunch of ponies.
Because you hop on our Sony's
fucking Golden Crest, son. Yeah, Rich, you know what? I'm gonna assume you watch this.
Well, actually, yeah, I was watching this right before we started recording.
Fantastic.
So I saw this game. Didn't know what the hell it was, and I still don't know what the hell it is. So I guess you could say it looks interesting. It's published by Nacon. We know they was in the news recently because of they're having some issues.
They
filed a motion, not bankruptcy. It's the step before bankruptcy, I guess.
Oh shit.
But yeah. The game looks interesting, I guess. It's not coming until 2027, so... I saw it. It's just like, you know, first-person shooter. There's vampires in there, it looks like. Different types of creatures that you fight. Looks interesting, but definitely got to learn some more information, I guess.
Yeah. So, Kuel says, Hunter the Reckoning was a cool series back in the PS2 Xbox OG days. Okay, so they're bringing it back, just like Marathon. And we will be talking about Marathon. All right, Rich, since you saw this show, I'm going to kind of rely heavily on you because the rest of us are ignorant. All right, next up, we got Wuthering Waves. It looks like some kind of anime game. Another one I don't remember. Rich, what can you tell us about this one?
I think this game was already on PC. I believe Brian, maybe he has heard of this game. But yeah, it's coming to console now. I guess that trailer basically was just saying coming to Xbox soon.
We've seen this in other press conferences.
Yeah, gonna be honest, a lot of these anime games run together for me, man. You know, the art looks nice. It's coming in July. It has Xbox Game Pass benefits, it says. That's cool. So here's the one game that surprised me, because people in the office are like, yo, Tony, you seen this? Because they know I like The Expanse.
Fighting games.
That too. But yeah, The Expanse, Osiris Reborn. Okay, and this is what I had said initially, right? I heard this was coming out, and I kind of dismissed it. You know how licensed IP games usually are, right? Bunch of, you know, quick crash, cash grab shit. But I saw this trailer. I'm like, yo, this looks legit. Like, it really captures the essence of the books. It may capture the essence of the you know, the TV series. I don't know. I've only read the books, but it seems pretty close when it's very Mass Effect-y. You know, it's like you select your character, you build your character, custom character. You have dialogue trees and shit. And I was doing some research. It seems like it takes place in between book one to the end of book two. Because you're not playing the main cast of the series from the Rocinante. So pretty cool. I'm very intrigued, especially if how they're going to carry or do the zero gravity stuff. Because gravity, if you've read the books or watched the series, gravity is a character in and of itself. You know, every single thing, you know, it has to deal with gravity and physics and shit. So pretty dope. So that's, this one's dropping spring of next year. So probably fall of next year. Let's be real, you know. But yeah, I mean, well, there you go. Maybe this is the Mass Effect 4 we really want. All right, moving on here, we got a game called Grave Seasons. It looks like some indie game. It says Grave Seasons is a narrative farming sim with a terrifying twist. Does anyone care about this?
I think people are going to like it less because Pocopia is out. That pretty much has taken over that market.
Who else says it's cozy horror? Does that work? Cozy horror. I guess. Rich, you have any insight on this game?
Yeah, I did see this game briefly because, you know, Blumhouse Games is the publisher of the game. Mm-hmm. So they've been at a couple of events that I've been to, and I believe this game is actually at PAX East, which started today. But I'm not at PAX East, so I wouldn't know. But I did see the game previously at other events. It definitely is for the cozy audience. What I saw before and what I saw in that trailer, they've definitely done a lot more things to the game. So I am a little intrigued to see, because what I played was completely different from what I saw today. So I would like to see how they have evolved it. But I don't know if I'm into that game yet. I'll just say we'll have to wait and see.
There you go. All right. Another one here. Serious Sam is back. But this one is a co-op roguelite. It's roguelite, excuse me, FPS for 1 to 5 players. I don't know about that one. again, Rich, I'm going to talk to you about all these since you seem to know much more. What's this game about?
Well, we know already 100%, Tony, you will not be playing this game. Absolutely, you know, roguelike. Not. What the hell is this? No, absolutely not. I saw the trailer. I thought, okay, another first-person shooter. I've never really gotten into the Serious Sam games, but I guess this is for fans that are really into this. I guess it looked okay. And one thing I will say about this showcase, I know it was a partner showcase. In my opinion, however, it wasn't really that great of a showcase. Uh-oh. But what they showed, you know, I guess it's okay, but this game... I don't know too much about this game. I saw the trailer. I said, okay, I know Serious Sam. I don't know if it's a game that I would want to check out, but hey, for Serious Sam fans, I guess they can be happy for something new.
Yeah, for sure. Well, here is the game we are excited about. Stranger Than Heaven from the Yakuza team. It's the Yakuza game that's kind of set in the past. What's interesting is it actually takes place during the course of several decades. It says 5 eras. 1915, 1929, 1941, 1940. But damn, they just rattled that shit off. But it's basically five different areas. And Snoop Dogg's in this shit for some reason. I'm not making that up. Oh, man. Yeah, no, I'm hyped for this, man. And Rich, this is interesting. They're going to have a special broadcast of this game on May 6th. Pretty cool.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm hyped for this game also. Looking forward to that broadcast. The trailer is interesting because, again, you know, the question we had when we saw this from the very beginning is, when is this game taking place? And so now, you know, it's 5 different eras. So, yeah, very, very interesting. Definitely want to see and learn more, so I'm looking forward to getting more details.
Yeah. Go ahead, bro.
Oh, no, I was going to ask, did they answer what's happening with that studio? Because, yeah, remember that before this, that they pulled funding from that studio.
Did they? From the Yakuza studio? I think you're thinking about Negoshi studio.
Yeah, I thought it was Negoshi's. Yeah. No,
remember, Negoshi left Yakuza. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So this is not the Negoshi game then?
No. This is the Yakuza, the Like a Dragon game, you know? Ryo ga Gotoku, you know, that studio. Mm. So yeah, different thing. But yeah, I'm already there, man. Here's Carlos's favorite game, Super Meat Boy 3D.
Oh, yes.
Hell yeah.
You know? And Carlos, you'll be happy to know that unlike all the games we've talked about so far, except for Grave Seasons, we have a release date for this one. Oh, shit. Hold up. That's March 31st? That's Monday, isn't it? What the fuck?
Tuesday, I think.
Let's go.
I'm getting it day one.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go, man. By the way, this featured image here for it, the thumbnail is hilarious to me now because the makers of Super Meat Boy took the same image and they gave it the DLSS5 treatment. You know, he's all fucking nasty looking meat and shit.
They don't lie.
It's hilarious, man. All right, we got another game called Forever Ago. Looks like some indie shit. Rich, what do you know about this one?
Is that the game that's by Annapurna Interactive? I think that's the publisher. I think the Annapurna games are pretty interesting. I know they have a mixtape dropping. I know Carlos made jokes about me looking forward to that game, but I actually am looking forward to the game because I had a chance to play it. So, I'll check this out. The trailer looked interesting, but, I definitely need to get some more information.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, Matt, you know, that doesn't look interesting to me, so we'll move on. we have another game, Ascend to Zero. I don't know what the hell this is. Rich, here we go. I'm already checked out. Roguelike. That's all I need to hear.
I thought that trailer I thought was pretty hilarious because it's like as soon as I see the trailer and see how fast the character is moving, I'm like, what the hell is this? And then they have this music playing with the game. Yeah, very catchy music, but I was like, yeah, I don't know what the hell this is. But I don't know. I don't know about that. But very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just read, because it's so weird. In this hack and slash roguelike set in the year 2025 was fucking last year, you know? That sounds futuristic. You are the last survivor of humanity. Traveling back in time where every run makes you stronger. Yeah, it's a roguelike shit. Starting with just 30 seconds, use your time-bending ability to steal time from your enemies, wield powerful weapons and items, and experience breakneck progression as you build your build evolves. All right, skip. All right, we have another one. Oh, is this like, hold on. Dispatch is coming to Xbox. Isn't this game already out? Was it not on Xbox?
No, it was not. It was on PlayStation and PC.
Oh, shit.
Now it's finally coming to Xbox, I think, in the summertime. So that's good for those who haven't played it. That's actually good news.
Yeah. Another game here is called Alien Deathstorm. It's a sci-fi horror FPS from Rebellion. Any insight on this one, Rich?
Yeah, that looks interesting. Of course, Rebellion, they made that game last year. I think it was Atom Fall. Yeah, they made Atom Fall last year. It's the same developer. I do like that they're doing other games aside from the Sniper Elite games because that's what they're known for. But yeah, this looks interesting. I mean, still a bit of a generic concept. It's a first-person shooter. You know, you're killing creatures and stuff like that. But yeah, it looked interesting. But yeah, I definitely need to see some more.
Yeah, no, the graphics definitely look nice. I'm checking out the trailer now. Quell says it's Dispatch on Game Pass. Doesn't say it is. At least the thumbnail and the description here. Because it seems every game that is on Game Pass says Game Pass from this website. Alien Deathstorm says Xbox Game Pass. And then another Xbox Game Pass game is called Frog Squad. What the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, trash. That's trash to show.
All right, we don't need to get into it. Yeah, what's up?
But one thing I will say, because you're talking about Xbox, and I do want to mention this to you, Tony. Yeah. You may not be happy to hear this. The Expanse game is actually getting a Xbox exclusive closed beta on April 22nd.
Oh, it's exclusive. Now, my question is it on PC, Xbox, Game Pass?
Well, that is a phenomenal question. They did not answer that question. They had a news post about it. They said Xbox Series X and S. I don't know if PC is included in that, but they need to clarify that as we get closer. But apparently, the closed beta will allow you to play a mission from the game, and it's going to be active until the game comes out. The game isn't coming out until, I think, next year. But the game is not exclusive. It's just that particular beta is. I'm pretty sure the game is coming to every platform still. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. By the way, I should note, because the first thing when I saw that it had a closed beta, I'm like, is this a multiplayer game? Because I was like already sending red flags. But no, it's just more, think of it more like an early alpha, kind of like what they did with Baldur's Gate, you know, just to get player feedback. So that's cool. I don't mind that. All right, next up we have your game of the show, Rich. Bluey's Happy Snaps.
That's not my game. You know, my niece might like that game. So, you know, that's true. But yeah, I know a lot of people love the Bluey games. There was another game that came out not too long ago that was on Xbox, and I did get a chance to take a look at that when I was visiting family. So, yeah, maybe it might be good. But obviously, you know, there's way other games I'd rather play than that. But
I'm joking because, you know, Rich, you're into grown man gaming.
Exactly. Yes. 100%.
Yo, it's funny, man. This happened last year. Some like game developers, I was showing off some like VR shit that came by the office, and one of the games was Bluey shit. And that's when I first learned about this franchise, because obviously I'm a 46-year-old man. I wouldn't, with no children, I wouldn't know what the fuck Bluey was, you know? And that's when I learned about, oh, it's a kid's show. Because I forgot what I asked the question. I was like, yo, what the fuck is this? Like, basically, the email said something, something, Bluey, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, is that the name of the developer? Like, what the hell am I looking at here?
We got the emails.
Anyway. next up, we got Stalker 2. I'm confused by this. Is this a DLC or something, an expansion?
Yeah, I believe that's some expansion DLC.
Okay. All right, Rich, you need to tell me about this one. What the fuck is Musa Dirty Fate? Is this a Wu-like? Carlos, what's the name we call those? Those kind of Chinese games?
A Wu-like, yeah.
Wu-like, yeah. So, Rich, what is this Musa shit?
Now, that actually, maybe that was towards the end of the show. I missed that one because I didn't finish the, there's a couple games that I didn't get to see. That must be one of them. But it does sound like a, you know, you said, what did you guys say? A Wu-like?
Yeah, Wu-like, yeah. You know, all these Wu games.
I need to pull up the trailer and take a look at this. But maybe Carlos, because maybe Carlos saw it, because, you know, Carlos is
I'm watching this
he
now.
Is the one that sent in those games.
I'm watching this now, and I haven't seen the combat yet. The graphics definitely look like, you know. Go ahead, Carlos, if you've seen this or know anything.
I'm looking at the trailer right now. Yeah, it definitely looks, it does have a, you know, that tint of Wu-like.
This is crazy. Yeah, it definitely has that Wu-likeness to it. But I got to see the combat. Because right now it seems
the combat is quick.
A word? Okay, let's see. Is the combat? There it is. Yeah, I'm going to label this as a Wu-like for now.
What, Tony, wait until you get to the big enemy. Like, I don't know if it's a boss or something. Oh, but yeah, when you see that, you're like, yeah, this is definitely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a Wu-like. They got the same. Wu-like. Oh, damn. Oh, that's a Wu-like. Uh-oh. That's a Wu-like. All right, so there you go. If you're into the Wu-likes, there you go. Very bloody, you know. Interesting. Also coming to Game Pass. And then another one here is called The Eternal Life of Goldman. Another Game Pass game. The demo's out today. Let me look at this trailer. What the hell is this?
Excuse me?
Like, Rich, you have any insight on this game?
Yeah, I'm also going to be looking at that one at the same time.
Okay, so it looks like it has an interesting animation style. Yeah, it's, you know, kind of cute. Looks like you're playing some, like, Jewish guy with powers. So, like, it looks like he has a little, like, that Jewish hat or whatever. I could be.
No, the yarmulke.
Yeah, that's what it's called, right? Not the yarmulke, the little version. You know, it looks like a coaster.
Yeah, that's a yarmulke.
Oh, okay. I thought it had a different name. He's doing some Scrooge McDuck shit with his cane. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't play this game, but, you know, the graphics look nice, very animated.
Hey.
You know?
Hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
Doesn't this remind you of the other game that Carlos was talking about with the woman, the old woman?
the grandma chicken?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, the game definitely has a nice little animation style. All right, so there you go. Yeah. And there's a demo available today.
I got to try that demo at. Yeah, the game does look good. The animation style, the graphics, yeah, looks awesome. Oh,
God. All right, next up, we have a game called Vaunted, also on Game Pass. Let's see what the hell this is. Yeah, because, Rich, this is like the last half of this shit. Hey, there's Brett.
Irish hello to you.
Hey. So it looks like another 2D game we're looking at here. Oh, no, it's 3D. Tactical RPG. Oh, okay. Interesting. I mean, the graphics look nice, but I wouldn't play this. Just being honest. Brett, so just so you're not lost, we're going over the Xbox partner preview. We're just going over all the games they showed.
Yay.
Yeah. Well, you don't... that's right. You don't like Xbox anymore either.
It's not... that's a bit reductive, but kind
of. I'm all about reductive, man. Got to bring it to... Yeah.
If you put it black and white, sure, yeah. Like, I'm not fanning anybody right now.
Yeah.
Y'all dropping balls.
Yeah. Or, you know, if I'm going to be more accurate, you're not as warm on Xbox as you used to be.
I am quickly packing up and making my digital nomad over to the PC side.
There you
go. I've kind of given up on consoles. And honestly, it's PCs they've streamlined the process to the point, like, it's not what it was 20 years ago, man. Like, and some of y'all young bloods out there who are probably not listening to this show, let's be honest, don't remember, but like, bro, getting your games to work right used to be a pain in the dick. It's much easier now. Now you can just click a fucking thing in your NVIDIA tab and it'll optimize your drivers and install and upload and Steam can do your mods for you. It's not nearly the headache that it used to be.
Brett, Brian's welcome to the Master Race goodie bag is in the mail.
Fuck yeah.
Nice. All right, let's keep moving. Another game I thought was on Xbox. I guess it isn't. Hades 2 coming to Xbox. I didn't realize it wasn't on Xbox. Or am I missing something here?
Oh, no, they just had to make sure it was a critical success before it came.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But it's dropping on April 14th, so pretty fast, and coming to Game Pass. What's up, Rich?
Yeah, and you see, this is why I said I feel like the show wasn't that great, because I think they closed the show with this game. Maybe there may be another game.
There's one more. Yeah.
Oh, there is one more. Okay, but yeah, some of these games, like Dispatch, another great game. But yeah, I feel like, yeah, these games, they definitely should have already been on Xbox, but I guess it is good. Better late than never, I guess.
You know, I'm gonna push back on that, Rich. Not in a mean way, but like, I kind of feel like being like, hey, we're having Hades and Dispatch coming to Xbox. Isn't that great news? My initial response is no, that's not great news. No, because here's why. Because the fact that they are coming to Xbox already belies a gross mismanagement of what the fuck you're doing. If you're telling me something has to become a cultural phenomenon before you start spinning the fucking gears to get it on your platform, somebody at your office should be fired twice.
Yeah.
Well, they already did fire somebody.
Yeah, they did. Phil Spencer's out of there.
He's out.
All right.
Don't come at me like with a like, oh, look, we've adopted one of the most successful games of the year. What, you want a fucking medal?
Yeah, welcome to the party. All right, and then the last game, so we could close this part out. It's called Artificial Detective. Rich, what the hell is this? I don't know if you know anything about this.
Yeah, that's the one I did not see. I saw people were talking about it online. I haven't looked at it yet, but I will take a look at it real quick.
Yep, I'm looking at it now, too. It's a third-person action-adventure where you step into the shoes of a robo-detective in a dystopian city overrun by rogue robots. Lead your underdog team of a military robo-dog and a human girl as you fight, hack, and outsmart deadly machines to uncover why humans are gone. Ooh, mysterious. Okay, I mean, this CG looks nice, you know, but where's the gameplay? None of this shit is gameplay. No fucking way. Keep going. I'm just scrubbing through the... Where's the... Okay, there's gameplay, finally.
Yeah, there's some gameplay, yeah.
At the end of it. So it looks like you're sneaking around. I mean, the graphics look nice. So I guess it's just a world inhabited by robots and there's a human with you, human girl or boy, you know, can't make assumptions, right? actually, you
2027.
Can't, yeah, right. Yeah, actually, you can't even fucking tell androgynous and shit. All right, so there you go. That's the Xbox preview. Rich, I agree with your assessment. This was kind of whack.
Yeah, I would like to see whenever Xbox, when they have their next showcase, talking about their first party lineup. Because there's a particular game I've been waiting for them to talk about that's supposedly coming out this year. That's the Gears E-Day game. So they need to start talking about that because we're gonna be in April next week.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that was disappointing. And then speaking about disappointments, Epic Games. Now, this was interesting.
Oh, uh-oh.
Because obviously we all know Epic Games, you know, Fortnite, the game that pretty much is dominating right now. Every game wants to be Fortnite. This is how you know this is a sign of bad times. When Epic Games laying people off, they've laid off 1,000 employees, bro.
Yeah, I think it's about time.
Yeah. But, Brett, one of those employees was one of the character designers of Team Fortress, who's been there forever.
Here's the thing. The dawn or the era of Fortnite is inevitably coming to a close.
I hope you're right.
Right. Like it's reached critical mass. It is either going to collapse in on itself and die or fizzle out and die. There is no game, no phenomenon, no cultural entity that has lived in the center of the zeitgeist for 20 fucking years. I don't care if you're a Spider-Man or Star Wars or anything. Nothing has been that saturated for that long. And to think it would be is honestly, it's just expecting exponential growth, right? Like you're already exceeding a level of success that the industry didn't know was possible 10 years ago. To think that you're just like, oh, I'm going to lock this in forever. No, you're not. It's not going to be a thing that happens. So it's kind of, you're in a situation of there's nowhere to go but down. So yeah, honestly, the next news I'm expecting to hear from Fortnite is we're laying people off, because what are you going to tell me? It got more uber successful. I expect the same thing from PUBG.
Yeah. Well, this one is specifically for all of Epic, but yeah, but to your point, it's like even Fortnite can't sustain all that shit. And I still think this is still a consequence of everybody over hiring during COVID when they just assumed, oh, the good times are going to roll forever. You know?
Well, also, I mean, there's building and then there's maintenance. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, they're not adding anything new. They're just like, what are they doing? Fucking new skins and shit? Like,
yeah, so I would kind of even then to just be a contrarian challenge you to be like, okay, so the game's built. Why do you, in a game that is built and perpetually live service, what is the point of keeping the staff around after it's finished? And I hate to be the cold, clinical, hard metal truth of that one, but if you're not keeping them on so that you can cycle them back into another project, then you can essentially downstaff with little consequence. That's the logical reality of it. What, are you going to keep them on there for what? To keep them on there? You can't. It's a publicly traded company. It's, again, why I hate this whole fucking system. It's literally illegal to do that.
Oh, you wait, hire people to fire them later?
No, to keep them on to be like... Tony, let's say everybody on the panel came to me and we made the Throwdown video game, right?
Yeah.
After the video game is done, it takes all six of us in this room to make the video game. Then what happens? The game's made. It doesn't take six of us to maintain a video game. In an ethical place, or, you know, I guess back at like the 70s/80s, the whole concept was, we've built this together. We're going to keep doing this together, right? But now with the privatization and making – taking companies public, you now have a legal obligation to maximize profit, which means since I don't need everybody in this room, it is technically illegal for me not to fire somebody.
Okay, that's the part I was latching onto. What is illegal? Okay, that explains it. But yeah, you know, that's the way it is, man. But I don't keep up with Fortnite because I just don't care. I'm not a 7-year-old kid. Oh, by the way, shout out. I think it's Quell who's making it rain right now. So who gave subscribers to people? I'm not seeing it. Quell. It was Quell. Thanks for making it rain, brother.
Thank you.
But yeah, Fortnite's time at it. Like, again, from what I heard just from the periphery, was that Fortnite is, you know, it's not as popular as it used to be. It's not making it as much money. So this shit doesn't surprise me. And two stories from now, I'm gonna kind of bring it all home. Why all this shit is happening? The true cost of AAA gaming.
Yeah. Before we move on, I just want to say I'm not saying that Fortnite is not going to continue to be a juggernaut and a powerhouse. Right? That shit doesn't just disappear overnight. But I am looking at the model of like what happened to Warcraft and being like World of Warcraft and being like, yeah, pretty much that. Like, it's not going to be around forever. It's going to sunset. Mm-hmm. It's not going to do so rapidly, but it's just, you know, it's the transience of all things, man.
Nothing lasts forever, even cold November rain.
Nothing lasts forever. And when you're at the top, there's nowhere to go but down. Those are just, you know, yeah, they may be just pessimistic reframings of what it's like at the top of the mountain, but it's also the reality. So when someone's like, hey, Tony climbed a mountain, that's awesome. Tony's coming down the mountain. Yeah, what the fuck did you expect after Tony climbed a mountain?
To just space. Live up there? That's Isaac Newton. Yeah, to go to space, motherfucker.
Yeah, he can't just stay there. He can't live. He's going to be the man on top of the temple, just keep ascending into space and live on Mars. Like, what the fuck is the end journey here?
Oh, man. All right, so yeah, there you go. Yeah, it does suck that those people got laid off, but this is the industry we have now. So next up, did I read that right? Yeah, you know what? Let me read some of Epic's statement because they actually admitted it. Today, we're laying off over 1,000 Epic employees. I'm sorry, we're here again. The downturn in Fortnite engagement that started in 2025 means we're spending significantly more than we're making, and we have to make major cuts to keep the company funded. This layoff, together with over $500 million of identified cost savings and contracting, marketing and closing some open roles, puts us in a more stable place. Some of the challenges we're facing are industry-wide challenges: slower growth, weaker spending, and tougher cost economics. Current consoles selling less than last generations, and games competing for time against other increasingly engaging forms of entertainment. They're fucking keeping it real. I'm surprised by this.
Like, what other increasingly engaging forms of entertainment? I'm curious.
Fucking idiot scrolling TikTok all fucking day, you know?
I'm sorry, I just made the perspective leap from like we're just getting dumber. That's what this is.
Yes. I'm gonna keep reading this. This is fascinating. I'm expecting like ultra corporate talk, and they're just like, yo, shit is fucked up right now. Whoa. And some of our challenges are unique to Epic. Despite Fortnite remaining one of the most successful games in the world, we've had challenges delivering consistent Fortnite magic with every season. We're only in the early stages of returning to mobile and optimizing Fortnite for the world's billions of smartphones. And it being the industry's vanguard, we have taken a lot of bullets in a battle, which is only in the early days of paying off for ourselves and all developers. Since it's a thing now, I should note that the layoffs aren't related to AI. To the extent it improves productivity, we want to have as many awesome developers developing great content and tech as possible. What we now need to do is build awesome Fortnite experiences with fresh seasonal content, gameplay, story, and live events, accelerate developer tools with greater stability and capability as we evolve from Unreal 5 and UEFN to Unreal Engine 6. That's the first instance I've heard of this. And we'll be kicking off the next generation of Epic with huge launch plans towards the end of the deal. Okay, so they're admitting it. Yo, we haven't kept up with the fucking content, and we got to get back to it. I'm very surprised. Oh, it was Tim Sweeney. No wonder. Okay. Wow. Okay. Tim, I'm glad you laid it all out there, bro.
Yeah, it's keeping it real.
Holy shit. But Brett, you understand my shock, right? Because you expect these fucking corporate ass things. You know, we didn't do blah, 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 blah. He's like, yo, we fucked up, bro. We kept our eyes off the prize, man.
Yes and no. Again, like, maybe I'm just being pretty black and white about things tonight, but it's just kind of, objectively recognizing the reality of the situation.
Yeah. But you don't usually get that. Yeah, no, it does. But you don't usually get that from, a corporation. That's my point.
You do usually get a lot of BS and corporate. So I'm assuming this has to be, I didn't catch who it was. And even if you told me the name, it wouldn't click in. But I'm assuming he has to be like one of the probably tentpole guys.
Yeah, it's Tim Sweeney, dude. You know?
Like that main guy. Yeah, like that's why he has the ability to have that candor. And I think.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are afraid to do that with shareholders, but that's, I think what he's doing is also, even within that context, a perfectly kind of legitimate, like, look, he's being a straight shooter. He doesn't want people investing and dropping because that creates volatile stocks. Being kind of real, like, it's a weird place. Stocks are just, I hate them because they're ephemeral, right? It's a popularity contest. So the problem is, if you pretend to be too popular, that can have a rebound effect. And none of this makes any sense or logic, just the same way popularity can't be fucking measured. And that's why I hate this. Because it's not about how much a game makes. It's about how much you expected a game to make because of how popular it was, mm-hmm. based off of people who don't play video games. So we're stuck in this weird Ouroboros of stupidity.
Yeah.
That being said, fucking don't try, like, I see what you're trying to do behind there. Like, we have invested so much into mobile gaming and taken bullets for an industry and really just thrown ourselves onto the pyre. And we are just now starting to finally see the return from that, from all that good hard work that we put. Go fuck yourself, right? Like, way to nail yourself to the cross for trying to pivot into mobile. Like, how fucking sanctimonious. I see what you're doing there. You ain't fooling nobody.
Oh, we got cynical Brett tonight. I like it. Oh, man. All right. Anything else you guys want to say about the Epic layoffs?
Well, maybe they just realized that they overstepped their bounds. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's unfortunate that people have to pay for that, though.
Yeah. They said the folks impacted by the layoffs will receive a severance package that includes at least 4 months of base pay with more based on tenure. We're also extending Epic paid, I guess that's the name of it, Epic paid healthcare coverage. All right, so they're giving them something at least, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it now. I see the window dressing.
Uh-oh.
Okay. They're covering a shit with a bigger shit.
Explain.
They made a critical and foundational error to one of the, and ruining one of, or the lead of one of the biggest gaming monoliths by trying to be greedy and pivot it into mobile. And now they are backtracking into the grim reality of the economics and how sad it is to let people go. They're letting the story of human tragedy obfuscate their own incompetence.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I wonder if when this mobile push started, I bet it was during COVID. You know, like, oh, look at all this fucking money we're making, bro. Let's expand, you know?
Well, actually. You probably saw lots of engagement during COVID.
Yeah. What's up, Carlos?
Don't forget that Epic had issues with getting their games on
that's
iPhones.
Right. Yeah.
Remember that lawsuit?
Mm-hmm.
So,
of which they lost.
Which they lost, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure they're still recovering from that.
Yeah. So Carlos, what's your thoughts on this, bro?
It sucks. It's the industry for you. Like, it's it's the most unreliable place to work in terms of job security. Because every month we get another big company. It's like, whether it's Microsoft or even Sony, everyone, but you know, a lot of the Japanese studios, but you know, from the, on the Western side, it's, you know, it's all loud, you know, a whole bunch of layoffs every time, or studio closures at that.
Well, Segway Kings, you know, unless somebody wants to say something, cause that was the perfect segue to the next one.
Well, hold on.
Yeah. What's up?
Real fast, before you segue, I just want to call out Carlos because he missed his opportunity. Obviously, nobody likes to hear about job loss, but Carlos, you were supposed to say that was an epic fail. So I had to say it for you. But yes,
It definitely was an epic failure.
Yeah. But yes, speaking about studio closures, Sony shut down another studio.
Yes.
Yeah. Why is the fucking... Yeah, right? All right. So I'm just going to read this from IGN's. Earlier this week, Sony shuttered another of its first-party studios, Dark Outlaw. While we've seen an unfortunate trend of Sony-owned studios closing, particularly those developing live service games like Concord developer Firewalk Studios in 2024, it turns out Dark Outlaw was not working on another ill-fated live service shooter. The revelation came via Dark Outlaw's former junior game designer known online as content creator JC Backfire, who interviewed his former boss, Jason Blundell, on his Twitch channel last night. Oh, shit, that's a hell of a revelation. While the pair couldn't go into details, presumably due to confidentiality clauses, JC said that he was excited to go work every single day, which is an absolute blessing, and he wouldn't change his time at the studio, and now the studio's gone. Shit. Sony is brutal. Somebody put up a graphic. Yo, they closed like over 10 studios in the last 5 years, bro. So, yeah, like Carlos, it was you, right, about the industry. It's a brutal industry.
It's brutal, man. There's no job security anywhere. I mean, even Uncle Phil.
Mm-hmm. Uncle Phil lost about his job.
This is the brutal reality of industry dominance, and this is why I was so upset about arrogant Sony.
Yeah. Well, everybody's feeling the crunch now.
You know, it's if you were to ask Riku, it's all about Herman Holtz.
Yeah, Riku, where you at?
my finger's still pointing at Jim Ryan and his remnants, you know.
Hey, you'll fuck Jim Ryan.
Fuck Jim Ryan. All of this is, ever since he left, that whole vision that he had just crumbled down into the Concordian timeline.
Damn.
It's pretty sad, you know. I don't even know what the hell Sony's identity is anymore in terms of, you know, developing games. Because they leveraged so much to get all these studios. You know, we talk about that Jade Raymond studio, which is, I think, is still active.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know what the hell they're going to do. But, you know, a whole bunch of studios just to develop all these games. They let go of Blue Point, which was the only studio that we actually cared about. And they don't really have an identity anymore. They don't even do the third person narrative stuff as much.
No, they don't.
So
no, that's because they spent all their time attempting to chase a dragon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, man. And then this next story kind of ties in the two last ones together. You know, why one of the possible reasons we're seeing so many layoffs. So Jason Schreier, he's been talking to some people, and he came up with something very interesting. So I'm going to read his post here from Blue Sky, because he's not on Twitter anymore. Exact budgets of video game productions can be tough to corroborate, but the numbers I've heard floating around AAA game developers these days are $300 million or more, sometimes much more, which I think helps explain the current state of industry. I didn't realize it was like that. That's the average cost of a AAA game. $300 million, dollars, bro.
Why?
Your answer is as good as mine. That shit is crazy, you know? But my only question is, if that's the average, how much is GTA 6 skewing that? Because that game so apparently cost $2 billion to develop. But either way, ballooning developing costs, marketing, all that shit, yeah, that's killing game, man. It really is AAA gaming, at least. So again, this isn't official yet, but you go ahead, Brian. But you know, I'm not surprised.
I love how the guy states the obvious. I mean, like, we all were there when Destiny 1 was told, yes. And then we found out that the game cost $250 million to make, and then had a $250 million marketing budget, and we're just like, okay, this is ridiculous. And ever since then, it's been the same case for every large AAA game. I mean, how much was Spider-Man 1 and 2? So,
yeah.
Again, the fact that these AAA games cost that much, I'm not that surprised, because I've been saying this for years, that the AAA games are just bloated and the cost way too much to make, and something has to give. And even Sean Layden said the same thing, or something along those lines. So, yeah, this is an awful time, and I think it's just going to get worse if nothing happens. So either AAA has to figure out a way to not spend as much money, or it dies.
Yeah, and then, Brian, the other thing I saw was, like, basically with those kind of budgets, a game needs to sell 6 million copies just to break even.
Okay, yep. So, like,
I don't know, I was about to say that sounds about right. Like, it has to sell a lot. So, I guess, contrary to PC Gamer's opinion, yeah, the player count does matter.
Yeah, right. Brett, what are you, what's on your mind?
So, I'm tracking some data here. So, Baldur's Gate 3 cost $100 million, and it was developed by a team of over 300 people across 6 international studios. Okay.
In a cave.
In a cave. And it's interesting when you contrast that against Divinity Original Sin 2, which, yes, was a previous game. Yes, there's been inflation. But the quality was not that much different. And so that game was made with a much smaller team, 100 people. But I can't help but notice that those y'all notice those numbers don't line up. So it's 10 to 15 million for 100 people.
Yeah.
And then when they looped in Wizards of the Coast, they increased to 300 people and spent $100 million. So triple their size, 10x'd their cost.
Yeah.
And that was by including a second corporate entity. I mean, this is the best show my math I can do for these kinds of situations, because it's the best set of statistically reliable data. It's one company, and you can watch their cost rise and their overhead or their staff increase. So I think I can generally state, like, you can see a distinct correlation. Like, the more IP integration and corporate entity you bring in, like, this balloons exponentially. And I can only assume that that's kind of also what's happening here. So, yeah, the fact that games are $300 million, why? Well, you're hitting a point of diminishing returns. You hit a point of diminishing returns a long time ago. I'm going to say Tainted Grail's probably going to, you know, they're not being publicly disclosed, but that game definitely cost less than $100 million to make. So, and yeah, we're ballooning these budgets and making it impossible to buy back. But then there's still a fundamental question, like, why does it cost this much? That's, everybody's just accepting this as truth. Meanwhile, we're having games with, like, small studios, 30 people and a dog looking at fucking YouTube videos making game sweeper hits for a fraction of the fucking cost. And I think we're just losing the noise and the signal, right? Like, the signal and the noise. Like, why are we just accepting that this is what games cost to make? That's the fundamental argument that all of this is based on. And everybody just blindly accepts it. Like, yeah, well, that's what it costs. $300, $300 million to make a game these days.
What do you propose? No, what do you propose then? If you don't want people to accept it, do you want them to, like, go to the streets and riot? Like what would be the solution?
Being critical and making your own decisions. So, like, for me, it's like them being like, oh, a game costs $300 million to make. No, a game costs $300 million for Sony to make, and that's a critical.
This isn't just a Sony thing, by the way. This is an industry wide thing.
It seems particularly bad for Sony. Sony can't get a game out for less than $200 million.
But yeah, no, you're not wrong. But I'm just saying this report was not about Sony games. It was about the industry as a whole.
I know. You're right. You are correct. I was pointing out the single most pervasive actor, and I'm not taking it back. But the point still stands. This is an industry-wide thing across many of the biggest people, or many of the biggest companies. So the question then, why? Why is it that big, long-standing companies are having trouble making their money back from ballooning budgets when smaller companies are able to kind of produce much of the same quality differently? Because asking that question, it changes the discussion. It moves it from, oh, that's just what it is, to, well, why is it that way? How can we change it? Who, like, and to me that matters, because ultimately for me, the root of the issue is, look, we can fire one executive and keep 10 developers, and nobody fucking wants to talk about that. I want to talk about that.
Yeah, well, talk about it, but it's not going to change anything. Let's just be honest.
I mean, why?
Because it's not you, Brett. It's you against like an entire game industry.
No, yeah. No, it's Expedition 33 sweeping the entire game awards with a total employee count less than 35.
Yeah, I guess I'm just lost as to. I just want to know what are the steps that that we should take to make this a thing. That's what I want to know. What's the game plan here?
I feel that there is a level of sycophancy prevalent in the game industry and accepted by most of the people that we just accept that these ridiculous metrics are a thing that need to be happening while we're repeatedly hit with outlier after outlier after outlier. How many Black Swan events do you have to fucking have before it's not a Black Swan event anymore? How many Silk Songs need to come out before you understand that maybe nepotism has ballooned the industry beyond the point where most big corporate structures can hold their own water and their own development costs? How much do we have to ignore the data that is staring us directly in the face and has been staring us in the face for 10, 20 years with executives ringing the alarm while we're just sitting here with our thumb up our ass being like, well, games just cost to make a lot now. It's just, at a certain point, it seems willfully ignorant to the point where it frustrates me.
But we're talking about it now, so isn't that a good thing?
It is. It is. And that's my point, is that Expedition 33 has brought this conversation to the foreground, and we're having it now, and we're not burying it like a cat turd. So, like, this is the work of kind of bringing this into light, like, just bitching about it and talking about it and correctly identifying it and then reframing the question to, okay, so if it doesn't have to be that you spend $200 million to make a game, why can some people do it and some people can't? And that's currently where we're at, right? Like, that's just the hypothesis phase, but asking the right questions is important.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because you're right. Rich, I'll let you go next. But to answer your question, it's because these guys are set in their ways. They've been doing things a specific way for decades, and they're such giant lumbering giants, you know, that they can't easily pivot unlike a smaller studio. Yeah, that's the fucking problem. Like, I'm not making excuses. I'm just telling you what's happening, you know?
No, I agree. And the problem is, like, they're failing to dodge like a fat Neo, and everybody is just pretending otherwise. Like, yeah, we're watching the entire video game industry crumble around us because these motherfuckers can't manage their own budget and just acting like it's a Tuesday. It's the Emperor's Got No Clothes shit. And I think just calling it out is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So
and then Rich after you, Carlos.
Oh no, my bad. Go ahead, Rich. I forgot you actually were chiming in.
Actually, I wasn't chiming in, but let me say this. I agree with everything that has been said so far. Continue.
Let's go. Classic Rich moment. Yeah, go ahead, Carlos.
I feel like one of the biggest reasons why budgets are ballooning or stay ballooned like this, not 100%, but a lot, is because of, you know, games being corporatized.
Mm-hmm.
And when games are developed by corporations, they have their set budgets every year that they have to attain. So whenever they pay for employees, they pay for research and development, you know, they release games or whatever stage of the life cycle of the development is, they have to maintain a budget. And that budget usually always goes up. When corporations and the bigwigs handling the money and the budgets are getting toward the end of the fiscal year, they're making sure that they are utilizing that amount of budget so they can maintain that same funding. Because if they're under budget,
yes,
then the expectation is that they're
going to... I was just about to say, yes, that. Spend it or lose it. It's, you know, because that is a thing.
When the creator of Gravity Rush, Toyama, said the reason why he left PlayStation was partially because of management changes. And the fact that they were essentially trying to force him to make higher budgeted games.
There you go.
Where he thrives in smaller games. That's Japan Studio, by the way.
Use it or lose it. Yeah, RIP Japan Studio.
I also want to throw in there, though, that there's distinct correlative data that shows a widening gap between the salary of management and the workers. Right? Like, it's not just 10x or 20x or 30x, like it's grown a ridiculous disparity to the point where, like, the old saying, you know, boss makes a dollar and I make a dive, that's what happens when I'm working on company time, like that it doesn't even apply anymore, because it's not even a 10-to-1 ratio. It's honestly, it's disgusting. And I think in that gap is where we're losing so much of the money that's being hemorrhaged in the industry, and firing 20 developers because you don't want to fire one grossly overcompensated nepo baby is something I'm just kind of fucking done pretending is okay in any way, shape, or form, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you guys want to say about this? Because if not, we'll move on to. By the way, I just realized a lot of these stories. Yeah, tonight's gonna. It's the financial down, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's the end of the fiscal year, so that's what you're gonna hear. You're gonna hear a bunch of studios getting closed or people getting fired. You're gonna hear about a bunch of that stuff. So there you go.
Yeah. No. With the exception of the Xbox partner preview, every single story we have here is about some form
even,
of financial.
Even that partner preview. That's what is that? It's the timing of that.
Yes, exactly.
It's all fiscal year bullshit. It's when all these companies do their when all the companies do all their budgeting for the year. You know, right now.
There's something objectively dystopian about a firing season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you can. The thing is, it's not. It doesn't take rocket science. You see the patterns. You see when they do them. It happens every single year.
At the same time,
you talk about the end of the year, right before December, right? Right before the Black Friday stuff, you get a big firing. Then at the beginning of the year,
yeah,
because they're trying to make it look make themselves look more profitable to their stupid fucking investors.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, like, and that when I say, like, I'm sick of pretending otherwise, like, I guess that's, like, I don't know if I'm just the only one, but, like, it's gotten to the point where it's just all just fucking theater. Like, everybody knows what's happening. You're not even cooking the books anymore because you've made cooking the book so fucking mandatory.
Yeah. All right, next one here. Now, this one hasn't been corroborated yet. Actually, Nintendo refutes it, which means it's probably true. You know, if Chris were here, he'd tell you that, like, every time Nintendo tells you that they don't, you know, comment on stuff like that, it means it's happening. Because usually Nintendo will just not say anything, you know. Anyway, the story is, this is from Bloomberg, which is probably also Jason Schreier. Nintendo to cut Switch 2 production by 30% this quarter after slower than expected holiday season, which, you know, obviously we do know that Switch is not selling as much. So let me read this real quick. This is from Go Nintendo, because obviously the Bloomberg article is fucking behind a paywall, you know. Bloomberg is reporting that Nintendo will be lowering production plans for Switch 2 this quarter by 30%, lowering the units plan from 6 million to 4 million. While Nintendo themselves haven't commented on the matter, sources quote-unquote familiar with the matter told Bloomberg that Nintendo is making this move following slower than expected Switch 2 sales during the holiday season. Nintendo will also apparently continue this reduced production rate into April 2026. Interesting. I don't know if it's Pokopia or Pocopia. Anyway, that the Pokemon game.
I like Pokopia.
Yeah, Pokopia, Pokopia, I don't know. Mamma Mia, Mamma Mia. You know? Pokemon Pocopia has proved to be a new system seller for Switch 2, but sources claim that Nintendo is erring on the side of caution, waiting to see if the game and other upcoming titles have staying power and continue to bring in new customers. Even with cuts planned, Nintendo should still be able to reach predictions of selling 20 million Switch 2 units in the current fiscal year. As was reported just last week, the life-to-date install base of Switch 2 is trending 45% ahead of the original Switch, at least in America. Past reports have noted that higher semiconductor costs have had Nintendo considering whether they should raise the price of Switch 2 or not. That hasn't happened, but apparently the pricey parts also have nothing to do with Nintendo's plans to cut back production for the quarter. Despite the slowdown, Nintendo is said to be confident in the long-term plans for Switch 2. And again, Nintendo just said their usual shit. This is merely a speculative article, and this is not the company's official stance, which means this is probably true. Because otherwise, they would just ignore all this, you know? Go ahead, Brett.
I just want to make sure I got the order of that information correct, because that was a confusing mess. Not on your part, I think on their part. So, Switches are still selling more than they used to in their previous generation. So, Switch was like one of their more successful consoles.
Yeah.
They're still tracking to do better than that, but they're doing less better than they had thought.
Yes.
And so they're dialing back their better to be still pretty good, but we're measuring that through the metric of the amount of less better that it is.
Yes, that sums it up pretty nicely, actually.
Okay, I'm done.
You're done with this industry.
I don't even, there's no comment to make to a faming so profoundly stupid. At that point, just you're just arguing with idiots. Not again, not you guys, but like
yeah, Nintendo.
That it, beating that argument is a failure in and of its own right, and I refuse.
Fair enough. Obviously, if Chris was here, I wanted to get your thoughts. But what about the rest of you guys? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, they didn't do as what they wanted, so they now have to. They have to. They need to retreat to what you know they usually do, the artificial scarcity.
Yeah, right. Go back to it. You know, it's amazing, man.
Is this artificial scarcity, or is this just adjusting for market? Because it feels like they're just like, oh, we've been selling a lot, now we have some surplus, so we're going to cut back manufacturing a little bit. Okay. And that feels, and maybe again, this is just the part of me that like, this is the industry that, you know, makes a big deal about, you know, somebody missing their mark by 10 million copies, when ignoring that like 90 million copies moved or something stupid like that. Like, we have a tendency to get caught on the trees and miss the forest here. So like, can anybody tell me that that's what's not happening here? The fact that we've just corrected an ambitious sales metric that was superseding its successor. Yeah. What am I missing?
No, I think again you nailed it, man. Shout out to your dog.
That's it.
You nailed it.
The pod dog agrees.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on here. Another related Nintendo thing. This one's interesting. Nintendo plans to introduce variable pricing with their games.
Mm-hmm. PlayStation already started enacted it.
Yeah, so this is from Nintendo Life. I'll read that headline, then we'll get into the article. Nintendo to change pricing for digital and physical Switch 2 exclusives, starting with Yoshi. An update. Nintendo confirms the cost of physical games is not going up. Okay, so there you go. Let me read the original story. What's up, bro?
They confirmed that it's not doing it, but that's not what that pricing does. It offers different people different prices that are lower or you know, different prices. So in other words, it's not going to give somebody lower and higher. It's going to give you each person a slightly different version of a sale. So the sales won't be universal across the board.
Yeah. Let me read this real quick. This is the original story. Nintendo of America, and this is confirmed, by the way. Nintendo of America has just announced that first-party Switch 2 exclusives on the eShop will be getting a different MSRP compared to physical releases. What that means is that going forward, it is very likely that digital games will be cheaper than physical games in the U.S. on Switch 2. Nintendo is kicking this off with the upcoming Yoshi and the Mysterious Book, which costs $59.99 digitally and $69.99 physically from the Nintendo store. Sharing the news on its own website, the company says that Nintendo games offer the same experience with bullshit. Okay, my thing is, the only reason digital games cost as much as physical is to not undercut like stores, right? But the fact of the matter is, digital games should never have cost as much as physical games. You're not manufacturing anything. You're not shipping anything. It's pure fucking greed, you know? And I don't see this like disparity of $10 as like, oh my God, Nintendo's, they're fantastic. It's bullshit. I realize the way things have been, but it never should have been that way. Digital games should never have cost that fucking much, you know? So so this is why I find this whole variable pricing be bullshit, because this is something that should have been in place fucking decades ago, you know? So yeah, it's BS. Manny, you obviously seem pretty learned on this. So what else can you tell us about it?
Well, at least the way it works is it just like, and people have been noticing this already, where in other words, you'll see a sale on your end, right? But you won't see it on somebody else's. So based on specific factors, sometimes even regions, there'll be a slight difference in the pricing, which is fucking awful. Even Walmart's talking about doing this too.
Oh my God, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I'm forgetting the name of the Manny, thing.
Go ahead. Walmart's starting to take the prices off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a video of it and I was like, what the fuck? Because, yeah, somebody going around, like, nope, I heard about it.
They can update them live, which is really fucked up.
Yeah, like they're showing how, like, they're going through, like, sweatshirts and being like, nothing in the, it was the ladies' clothing section, but, like, nothing had a price on the tag. It was all in digital tags on the rack that it was on. I was like, oh, that's...
I'm looking this up. There's a specific name for this. But basically, we talked about this before, where let's say you go to a supermarket, right? And you you pay with a specific credit card. You're like, oh, that's a fancy credit card. Charge him more, you know? There's a specific name for that, but that's what this sounds like to me, you know?
Yeah, it's variable pricing. So there's kind of two prongs on this. One is that it's horrible and predatory. Two is that it already happens in zip codes with high income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of honestly split. Like, a dick move. Also, there's a third smaller prong. So the world's weirdest trident is, I don't fucking trust it. Nobody invents a new system to charge people less money. Nah. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just the cynic in me, but I don't fuck. Even if you lead that way, even if you're like, look, I have proof. Fuck yourself. I'm not taking the bait.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, again, it's like if you're getting drastic differences just based on the person, that shouldn't be it.
Yeah, it's fucked up, you know. But
everybody should be getting the same. If somebody's paying one price for something, everybody should be paying that same price. Now you're just like, oh hey, look, oh, you know, he plays a little bit more. Okay, let's give him a discount. Oh hey, he plays too much. You know, it's obvious he's going to buy these games anyway, so let's not do it. Give him the discount.
Okay, so this thing has several names. Another one is called Smart Rounding. Oh, and it's AI driven. Of course it is.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Nintendo, you're not going to get a clap on the back for this one. Fuck
yeah, Manny. I'm gonna have to drift you away from the idea of inherent value and back into the idea of customer exploitation, if I could.
No, I mean, it's not.
The students are not happy.
It is customer exploitation.
Oh, I'm joking. I'm saying like that's the whole point is
mm-hmm.
bad joke, but still, it's I don't know, man. We're descending into a dystopia faster than I can anticipate. But we're pushing back in places. But I honestly kind of I'm starting to see the collapse of the game industry as more of a symptom of the rot fighting itself than the collapse of a thing. Like the parallels I'm starting to see with Lothric here are striking.
With what, Brett?
Lothric from Dark Souls.
Oh,
okay. The golden kingdom from Dark Souls. They're like, oh, yeah, it's all love, light, and regeneration forever. And like, oh god, it's a system that is just built out of entropy after enough points. Like when you build a ship of Theseus out of rotten pegs, then eventually your whole boat fucking sucks.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. But in good news, and Brett, I'm going to preface this with, I don't have attach rate numbers for this one, so sorry. I'm going to keep giving you shit about that, bro.
Hey, sometimes I just want context, yo.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. But, you know, again, you could have said, hey, is this game still popular? But this is another game entirely. Crimson Desert.
It has to be fucking agreeable.
Crimson Desert has sold 3 million copies in 5 days, bro.
That's as much as I thought it would be.
What happened, Brett?
That just doesn't seem like as much as I thought it would be. But also, I don't know. That's one of those. Someone tells you they're pregnant. You're like, I don't. Congratulations. I'm sorry. Or cool. I guess.
Yeah.
We have a firm rule in the tattoo world. When somebody just tells you something that like you land right in the middle and have no reaction for, you just kind of look them in the eye and hollow and go right on.
Damn.
And they just go away.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm taking tattoo world in context. Usually when someone's pregnant, you say congratulations, you know? But it might be different in tattoo world. Maybe that pregnancy wasn't wanted, you know?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it depends. You have to look for the small cues. If you just got it, like, through text with, like, I don't know, are you happy about this? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Can somebody please? And I'm one of those, you know, overthinkers. So, yeah, I might get lost in the weeds and... But I've known people that have gotten I'm pregnant. And then people are like, congratulations. And they're like, no. And that's equally awkward and terrible. So,
yeah, that's fair. But yeah, what I find interesting about this is because this game has been kind of divisive, you know, like, the reviews came out and generally people were kind of on like, I don't know about this game. But now obviously we had the whole AI controversy people didn't like, but it seems like things are turning around for it. Like the more people play it, the more they're enjoying it. Cause again, there is a lot of shit going on in this game. So, it's definitely one of those games where like the people like it more than the critics. I count myself as one of those critics. I'm not saying I don't like this game, but I'm like, okay, I played what I needed to for this review. I'm never touching this shit again. So I kind of fall in that camp, but I'm also glad that people are enjoying this. And hey, this is I know, Quell, that you're going to say it's not a new IP, but it kind of also is. So it's good to see that. Not just, you know, Call of Duty 57 or some bullshit, you know? And like I said in my review, even though this isn't for me, I applaud the ambition behind this game, you know, because they said, fuck it, we're throwing everything into this motherfucker.
Wait, what do you mean? This isn't a new IP? I don't think this is an expansion on Black Desert in any more than the conceptual phase, was it?
No. Well, apparently it was supposed to be a prequel to Black Desert, but then they were like, no, fuck it. We're just doing a single player game now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the definition of its own IP. It doesn't share lore. It doesn't share, like, just because it shares developers and certain mechanical similarities doesn't mean like it's not its own IP.
Yeah, Kuel says, and he's the one that was saying that, by the way, Brett. He says it's the same universe as Black Desert. I did not know that.
Oh, okay. That's the lead I was looking for. So, okay, yeah. It does share. Okay, so then it, by definition, it's not. I take back what I said. That I will is eat true. The fresh crow.
There you go. That's what we do on Throwdown, man. I've eaten crow plenty of times myself. But yeah, I consider this a good thing. Shout out to the developers, you know, and shout out to the fans. The other reason I want to talk about this story is it really seems to me like Black Desert Online, I'm getting fucked up. Crimson Desert is going to be one of these games that's going to be very different 8 months from now. Fuck, it's different now. They added so much shit. And Manny, to your point, they probably had that shit planned already. It's just like, okay, get it out now. Already, you know,
they already, you know, you remember, like, just because you ship the game doesn't mean development ends. So exactly. they probably already, you know, already sent went gold on it, and then they just used the time in between, you know, then and the actual release developed to put together, you know, and fix issues that they already knew were there.
Yeah, I don't have them here now, but on the Sunday show, I believe we did go over just some of the patch notes. The first patch had an insane amount of notes, and it was all like fundamental changes. I'm like, you know, they made some of the bosses, like, you know, more streamlined. They made the combat, like, you know, like they just did a lot of shit. So I don't think that's going to stop. I think they're going to keep going. So, yeah, shout out to them and shout out to all the people enjoying it. But you know, to kind of round the show out, we're going to talk about sales numbers for another game. And these sales numbers don't look as rosy. Marathon, big Sony game, right? Big Bungie game has sold 1.2 million copies. And here's the interesting part. 70% of those sales are on Steam, and Sony doesn't see the full cut of that. You know? So somebody made the obvious call here. It hasn't made the splash Sony and Bungie wanted. Yeah, exactly. And shout out to Reggie. I know he's very worried about the future of this game.
Are we still waiting for the first for the single player mode?
Yeah.
is that what we're still waiting for?
Yeah, what's up, Carlos?
Well, Tony, you know what they say, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Right. Well, at this rate, it's gonna be called a flop-a-thon, you know.
Uh-oh.
Because I think this might be the next Concordian.
Uh-oh. And we always predicted that this was going to be the least Concordian-like out of all the Concordian games from the Concordian timeline. Which, does it retroactively take in Redfall as well? Because I want Redfall to be part of the Concordian timeline.
It was the original one.
Maybe that's just
me. It was like the predecessor.
It's Old Testament.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. What's the point? Oh, yeah. Tying it back to our previous story, this game probably did cost $300 million in that range, right? So that would mean it needs to sell 6 million copies, right, to break even. 1 million copies? I don't know, bro. Unless some miracle happens, I think this shit is done, you know?
If Destiny 1 cost $500 million in 12, 13 years ago money, well, when did it come out? 2013, 2010? I forgot, one of those years.
Yes, it was 2014. 2013, 2014, around that time, yeah.
Over a decade ago. So another AAA game from the same developer, Bungie, releasing these days, I mean, it's got to be within the, at least close to 500 million.
I agree. Yeah. Again, I was just using that number just to be generous. It probably costs a lot more than 500 million. Let's just be real here.
Bit of why.
So yeah, I think Marathon's done, you know. Rich, what are your thoughts on this? Mr. Richard, there he is.
Well, first and foremost, yeah, Carlos had excellent timing with that joke. yes. Well, shout out to Reggie. I know he is concerned about this game. I mean, listen, Bungie has an opportunity now to show that they are going to support this game. And I really, that is the question, because again, we know with Destiny 2 dropped, and then of course it felt like Bungie was not really supporting it. They took a lot of time away. Obviously, they're also still working on content for that too, from what I understand. So it's all about how they maintain, now that they see some people are starting to like the game, where does it go from here? But I think that what you and Carlos said is right on the money. Yeah, this is Concord territory, but this is Bungie, so they have a grace period for now. But obviously, let's see where they are at by the end of this year.
Yeah. Yeah, because at least you're not hearing people say it's boring, like High Guard, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I will ask you this, Rich. What's going to happen with, was it Fair Games? Where is that going to land?
Oh, that game is going to be called Flop Games, because we haven't heard a damn thing about that. And, you know, I believe that Manny has already said before, obviously, we're going into Q2 of 2026. This is a studio you may hear about getting closed next. I just don't know when they're going to make that announcement, because we haven't seen a damn thing from this game or heard any updates. So something is coming soon, I imagine, though.
Yeah, we'll see. Kuel says, if I were Sony, I'd keep a team crunching on Marathon. It's not a total failure. Yeah, that is true. It is actually not a total failure, but it's also not off to a great start. You know how these brutal these investors are, you know? Like, oh, you didn't hit 600 million copies in 2 hours? You're fucking done, you know? So we'll see about that. But yeah, I don't, except for Reggie, I don't know a single person, you know, that's playing this, man. You know? I, you know, take that how you will, but I don't really see a lot of enthusiasm for it. And that's the other thing about, you know, well, by the way, oh, go ahead, Rich, and then I got a little funny anecdote to add.
Wait, so I just was going to ask, Tony, so no one at Tom's Guide has been playing this game?
Actually, you know what? Yes, they actually have, actually.
Okay.
The video guys, the guys on the video team, they actually have been playing it, and they like it.
Really?
Yeah, so there's that. Okay, so there's that. There you go. But the thing they said was, and it's two of them, they're like, I'm surprised I like this. Very interesting. By the way, hopefully Reggie doesn't get mad at me for saying this, but I'm going to say it. Yo, my man calls me up last night and just talks to me about Marathon for like 20 minutes. You know, it's hilarious. I would have let him talk, but you know, it's a weeknight. I had, you know, like, yo, bro, I got to fucking make my food for tomorrow and shower. I can't talk all night. It was, even though it was mostly Reggie doing the talking, let's just be honest here, Rich. You know, I kind of just like, yeah, that's right. Shout out to Reggie, man. You know, hey, you call me, I will answer, bro. Just putting that out there. All right, man, unless you guys want to add anything else, we are done. So let's plug some stuff. Rich, what's coming up on the Coalition this weekend?
All right, so first and foremost, shout out to Mr. Adam Vale, the TV Terminal. They have some other shows that they have been working on, and I've actually worked with Adam on some other show that I can't talk about now, but stay tuned for that. Of course, the Invincible podcast returns. Yes. I am hopeful that I will be able to be on the next show, because I'm actually going back to Boston for my mom's birthday this weekend.
Shout out to your mom.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. Should be a fun time. So we'll see about that. But, as for what's coming to the Coalition, April is going to be a very busy month. We have already seen some things coming in, so I would highly recommend you stay tuned to thecoalition.com as well as the Coalition Gaming, because there's a lot of stuff that we will be covering for sure in April. So stay tuned.
Yeah. I mean, you already mentioned it, but I just want to mention again, yes, the Invincible Podcast is back. It's me, Carlos, Rich, Dana, and Rich having a good time there. No Chris action this week, potentially, because we are going to be filming a little early. After that, we'll resume a regularly scheduled program. I'm having a blast, man. Again, Invincible is literally the only show I watch on TV, so I'm glad it's good. You know, so enjoy that. The conversations are really fun. It's a highlight for sure, you know. It's also, you know, on a personal note, it's like fun doing something that's like not a gaming podcast, you know. Mm-hmm. But obviously wouldn't be doing a pop culture podcast, and then I just get angry because there's a reason why I only watch Invincible, because all the other shows are just woke and stupid now, you know. But Manny, you are in Chi-Town. What can you tell us?
Yes, I am. So yes, I am in at C2E2 in Artist Alley. I'm at Artist Alley table M14. Have all kinds of cool prints and all kinds of fun stuff there. So if you're in town, you know, for the show,
are you in Chi-Town?
Give me the Chi-Town, you know, come by, drop by the table, say what's up, you know. Then there's also no, you know, pressure. You don't need to buy anything. You just say what's up and hang out and just, you know, be on your way. It's no big, it's all about good times, right?
Nah, so, man, yeah. You go to that motherfucking table, you give them that money.
So yeah, so that's, you know, we got it's a pretty big Artist Alley, so there's a lot of folks there, so good stuff. Yeah, and I'll be here until Sunday.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Good stuff. All right, man, we're out of here, so make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter, subscribe on YouTube, check us out on Discord, join the Discord group, shout out to the Discord gang, you already know. And of course, you can find us on your favorite podcast app. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight, I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
And Brian Manjoma.
Later.
All right, guys, we shall return later.
Peace. Peace.